Alcorn and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello, and welcome to Community Matters on WGTD. I'm Jane Herring, and I'm really looking forward to today's program. Our topic is the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, or KIN, but locally known as the Old Chrysler Property. Located in the center of town, residents have seen it thrive as Chrysler. They've seen empty buildings, which were then torn down, the land cleared, and now what? The community has an opportunity to weigh in on the neighborhood's future on May 4th between 5 and 8 o'clock p.m. at the former Brown Bank Building, 2222 63rd Street. A presentation is going to be made by the City of Kenosha at 6 p.m., but residents can come at any time between 5 and 8 p.m. to learn more and to contribute their own ideas. Keep listening here, though, because you are definitely going to learn more about KIN as we talk with Mayor John Antaramian and KIN Project Manager Ed St. Peter. So when we're talking about the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood, really, what are we talking about? I know for us, my family, we're driving down 52nd and, what's happening at the Chrysler location? So give me a little bit of history and location, especially for our listeners who are from out of the Kenosha area or new to Kenosha.
Well, let's start with the history. It's an old American Motor site that eventually ended up being Chrysler. And when Chrysler ceased producing cars in Kenosha and then ceased producing engines in Kenosha, this site became basically an old brownfield site. Chrysler went bankrupt. And because of that, the courts split up the company. And they created a company for Chrysler. And then they created another company called Old Carco. And in doing that, they took assets from the company and split them. So all the good assets went to Chrysler. All the bad assets went to Old Carco. And that's how they split the company to try to save the company. So in doing so, the Kenosha site became Old Carco because it was a site that they weren't planning on using for development purposes again. The bankruptcy court had control of it. Went through the bankruptcy process. The federal government then basically, because they didn't want the property, offered it to the state. Under state law, the state can't take property. So what they have to do is what they call is create a straw man. They create an attorney, they get an attorney that creates an entity, and that entity is responsible for the party, for the property. The problem with that is that whoever is responsible, whatever money that might come with that, they'll use for a cleanup initially. But then when it's done, it's done. They don't spend any more money. The state not going to put any money into it. And so now what you'll have is a facility in the middle of your city that is basically a brownfield forever. So that wasn't acceptable. The state didn't want it. So what they did, they would take it if they had to. That's what the state did, is they turned it over and offered it to the county. Well, the county didn't want it. And I understand why. First off, county isn't used to doing brownfield redevelopment at that time. And secondly, there's a huge cost to doing this. So they didn't want it. So then they turned to the city and said, city, do you want it? Now the city is in a different situation than everyone else. First off, if we don't take it, we're back to the county or back to the state taking it. And you now have an old factory site in the middle of your city that's never going to get cleaned up or redeveloped. So the city has no choice. So the city took the property. After taking the property, we've been working on it since 2010, roughly, and getting the property, getting into going through the bankruptcy, getting whatever funds we could get from the feds. So we've spent about $30 million to clean up the site. Now that's including the city, the state, and the federal government. So all three have participated in that process. So we now have the site pretty much cleaned, except for about 11 acres. And those 11 acres have oil on it. And the problem is the oil is down 20 feet.
Ouch.
So you can't dig it out. You can't really treat it the way you normally would. So we are controlling it with pumps so that the oil cannot leave the site. And then what we do is we're going to be putting enzymes into the ground. We always joke because we always call them bugs, that you're injecting bugs into the ground, and those bugs eat the oil over time. It's their food. So as they eat it, the bugs multiply, more bugs eat the oil faster. And so that's the process. And then when the oil is gone, these bugs have been designed and created in a way that once the oil is gone, they have nothing left to eat, they die off. And therefore you've got a clean site. Now, this isn't fast. It's going to be, it's a concept of natural attenuation. It'll take time for this to work, but it does work. And we're at a point in time where the DNR has given us a clean bill of health. We can start doing work on the site, start developing the site, because this has nothing to do with anything that we have to do for the cleanup, because it's down 20 feet. And as long as I can get the injections in, we're good.
So it doesn't have to be like the last part of that property to be developed. It doesn't matter because it's happening.
It's happening through injections.
That's so really interesting.
Let's say 5 years, 3 years from now, we discover that there are areas on the site that it's just not working as well as it needs to. We need more bugs. We inject more bugs. So it's not.
No matter what's built on top of it, you can still get to it.
Right.
Cool. So development, big site, and I know you've had some really excitement over it for quite a number of years, but then things start to change, I'm sure, to accommodate really the times and the type of businesses, the demands of the neighborhood. So what are your dreams for the site right now? And then we can talk about the reality of how the consultants are working with you or the developing company.
Well, I'll talk about the dreams of where we want to go and some of the things that we want to see built. And then I'll turn it over to Ed to talk about the consultant and what's going on.
Terrific.
This site is 110 acres. It is an innovation concept that we're putting, which is a live, work, and play concept of what's going on. The overall planning of the site basically deals with making sure that we have the ability for young people, and not just young people, but anyone who wants to start their own business, that they're going to have an opportunity to start their own business, that there'll be help for people to start their own business. There'll be help financially. There'll be help people working with them on their technology, people helping them to get where they need to go. So part of this is creation of entrepreneurs. Part of it is education. We're looking at a school, a Lakeview Academy concept there, a STEM school, whatever you want to call it, on that site also. And that would be part of what we're looking at. We're looking at an incubator facility on that site to get that piece of it started. So we're looking at buildings, the first couple of buildings being a school and an incubator facility. So those will be the first two buildings that we're looking at. Infrastructure is going to go in on the site with roads. We've applied for grants. We've done all sorts of things that we need to do to try to make this work. So the goal in the end, though, is still education, innovation, technology transfer, working with young people to make sure that they have opportunity. All those things become part of what the Innovation Center is and needs to become. And at the same time, it also needs to be a place for people to live, work, and play. So all those things tie in. And by doing that, what you find is that you will get more companies coming into the area looking at R&D because they're interested in all these young people, all these people coming to the area for talent. So these companies come in looking for talent. So they create some of their own R&D facilities here. So you have a mixture of excitement and change. And that's why we have higher education involved. We have all four colleges in the local community. Parkside, Carthage, Herzing, and Gateway, all are involved in this project. We have colleges from outside the area that are involved in this project. We have companies from all over, Jockey being one of the main ones who has jumped in with both feet, and a number of other companies that I'm not necessarily allowed to talk about at the moment yet, but they're there. We have a huge amount of people who are interested in participating in this project, because what it does is it brings young people here, it maintains the young people here, it provides the education in the six communities that surround this area, because there's so much tech needs in the area that this is going to be a tremendous opportunity for these young people who need to have the skills to be able to succeed. This will help provide those skills. So with that, I'll turn it more over to Ed and let him talk about the processes and everything else that are going on.
Yeah, so we're actually under contract with two consultants. The first one is Waymaker Group, and they're really working with creating the atmosphere for partners to come and join us. As the mayor said, there's about 25 partners right now that have, I can't say total commitment, but very strong interest in being not only involved, but actually being on site, to have facilities on site for education, for potential factories, for, as the mayor said, entrepreneurial opportunities. So that firm is working in that area, a lot of it with education initially. If we don't have the educational support, this isn't going to work. So we've been working very hard this entire year, as the mayor said, with each one of the colleges in Kenosha, and their interest is really exciting. We just met this week with all of either the president or chancellor of those universities at the highest level. They're involved, personally involved. So we're excited about that. Right at the end of the year, we signed a contract with Smith Group. They've got offices around the United States, but they put together a team of specialty areas. So we've got people from their Detroit office, Madison office, Chicago office. So we've got the best of who they have for the needs that we have in our community. The first area that we're working with Smith Group is on community input. So we've been meeting, we met with six different groups now, Zoom meetings, to find out what their interest is for this site. What do they want on here? Just day before yesterday, we met with a group of specifically community, and there were high school kids that we had in this group, asking them, you know, what would you like to see here? What would cause you to want to stay in Kenosha? Whether it's education or attractions or just different things that they would want to do. So we're accumulating all of that, putting that together. And on May 4th, which is really important, and we're glad to be able to talk with you about this, May 4th at the Old Brown National Bank, 23rd Avenue and 63rd Street, just west of where we had all of the fires, the city, through the mayor's initiative, bought that bank. So we own that building now. And on May 4th, there's going to be a public open house for anyone in the community to come and to share with us and with Smith Group what they would like to see on this Chrysler site, the KIN site, Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood. So that's from 5 to 8 on May 4th. We are hoping that there'll be hundreds of people there. We're going to have it spread out. We understand the COVID issues, and we're going to make every effort to keep people spread out, but give them the opportunity to share what their interests are, what their dreams are. You know, we could have mothers there dreaming about their kids, what they want for their kids, and we're looking for that. So that's the first phase, is really community engagement. Once we get that completed, or while we're working on that, then we have to start looking at infrastructure. Mm-hmm. I was going to say behind us, but since we're not going to be on video, I won't say it. But behind us is a map that shows those streets. So 28th Avenue is a north-south street that will be going through. And then 56th Street will kind of intersect it going the other direction. And Smith Group is responsible for doing that design. So right now we've got a brownfield, as the mayor said. The only thing that's in there is a retention basin. That's been paid for by the city. It's installed. Otherwise, the only thing on that site is an electric, high power, high tension electric lines that run through there. Otherwise, it's just a blank. I don't want to call it brownfield anymore because it's cleaned up. It's a greenfield. It's a greenfield ready for development. And we need to put in sewer, water, paving, gas, electric. So all utilities have to be installed on those two main streets. And that engineering work is underway right now. We hope to have bids potentially out by year end and construction next year to get these two major roads installed. So that's kind of phase two of what Smith Group is doing. We also,
go ahead. Let me stop you there because those two are huge phases. And to be honest, to me, even though I know it takes a heck of a lot of work and money to install all of the utilities and plan for something that's not there yet and not firmed up, to me, that's almost the easier part than trying to channel all of these community ideas and wishes and dreams into something that has some focus and something that will really offer return back to the community. Who gets to sift through all of those fabulous ideas and then turn it into something?
Well, it's actually three different groups. So the Smith Group, the City of Kenosha, and the community themselves. So we've got a stakeholder group. And again, there's five different groups of stakeholders. There's about 20 or so in each one of those groups. We've met now the first time, but the plan is that there'll be three separate meetings as we move along. We'll continue to refine as we go along. We get this first group set of meetings done. We have the May 4th meeting. Then we will meet again as a team and begin refining that to come to a little tighter funnel as to where we're going to go. Then we're going to meet with those five groups again, and we'll funnel it down some more. And then finally, we'll come with the third time through, and then that will finalize the master plan, which then has to be approved by City Council and, you know, all of that work. And there's council is part one of these groups, City Council. So there's a lot of involvement from the elected officials, from the community, from the state. So there's people that have been involved at the state level, representatives. So there's a real swath of interest and involvement from the entire community. So those are really two separate tracks. And even from the Smith Group, they have planners and people that work with that kind of development. And then on the infrastructure side, they've got civil engineering and people of those of that type that will be working on that plan. And we have the same thing within the city. We have planners and engineers that will be working on separate tracks.
What kind of time frame are you talking about to get to that final master plan? Is it 6 months, a year, 5 years?
Definitely not 5 years. No, the plan is to have the master plan completed before the end of this year. Probably the end of fall would be our guess at this point to have the master plan in place, you know, ready to get approved.
I'm sure you're going to get to this, but there's also a survey for those who can't attend the meeting, and I'll mention that again and also have a link on our website for that survey. But what I found kind of interesting as I was going through it is just the amount of lifestyle, neighborhood type of questions there. I expected to see what sort of jobs would you like to see there? And it really wasn't about the businesses. Is that because you've got somebody else really handling that aspect of it? Or maybe you want to address that?
Well, I think the concept on the business side has been pretty much determined as to what we're looking to do on that site. So you're looking at innovation, you're looking at education. Those are all pieces. You're looking at R&D. Those are all pieces of what's going to happen. Training becomes a large part. So those are the things that we're going to be doing. Now the question is, how does that integrate with what the public wants to see happen on the site with that, because that by itself doesn't work unless you have, you know, they always call it collision concept of where you bring in all these different groups and all these different people, and that they basically collide, and colliding they create. So it's kind of that concept of what are we doing. So I think from the business side, you know, the retail, or there's going to be retail there, there's going to be restaurants there, those things we know are going to be there. We know there's going to be housing there, the amount of housing and how that's going to do you to find out. Those are questions that still have to be determined. You know, but the concept of the training, the R&D and that type of thing, that's built into the system. So that is going to be on the site along with then the other issues that we're talking about. And so that's how this works.
Perfect. Thank you. And Ed, okay, we talked about those two phases, the infrastructure and then the community input. What other phases are there once you get that final? Well,
okay, there's a high school that we're working with Kenosha Unified School District for the potential of a high school being built there. So we've got a meeting actually next week, meeting with their upper level people with Smith Group to talk about location, site plan, those types of things. The city's also applied for an EDA grant, one for infrastructure to help pay for the sewer and water and paving. And then there's a $10 million ask in the state budget for the first innovation building on site. So that there's $10 million there. The city's got $10 million that they've got set aside for that. And we're looking for funding to make it even a bigger building than what we were initially hoping for. And that plan for the school and this building for design to be done this year and construction next year.
Wow.
So get the roads put in, get those two buildings built. Get internet put in there, and we're ready to rock and roll.
I guess. No, and it's very encouraging because I think people have seen the big mounds of concrete and ground there for a number of years because that had to be done. But it sounds like now that it's flat and green and clean, you really are full speed ahead. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yes. We definitely are. Full speed ahead. This is an important project to not just the neighborhood, but to the community. And this is an opportunity. And that's how we look at this in the sense of why we're pushing so hard on this, because it changes the potential lives of so many young people. It gives a lot of hope for a lot of young people that there's going to be the training that they can get, the potential jobs that are out there, because there are jobs out there. We just don't have the right training in some cases. And so this will definitely improve that situation so we can get people into jobs that are going to pay, that are going to be beneficial for them. So there's a, you know, the old adage, the light at the end of the tunnel, that they see an opportunity that enables them to grow, not just be stagnant. So this has got a lot of potential, in which case it can be a tremendous asset to the community and to the business community on top of that, because they're in need of skilled employees. So this is just a natural, in my opinion, of where we're going, what we need to do. And again, helping to keep our young people here, helping to make sure that there are jobs available that pay at higher levels for them to stay here, because we lose so many young people.
I think something that the mayor said is kind of a tagline that we've been using. We told that to the Smith Group and Waymaker when we got started. And his quote is, we need to find a way to keep our young people here. We need to build a bridge to the 21st century. So that's kind of been our theme and our tagline. It's about talent. It's about building neighborhood and pathways for training and job opportunities for our young people in our community. That's really the base of what this is all about.
Well, and I think what I'm hearing from you both is that you really, pathway is the right word. You're beginning with giving them a lifestyle, you're giving them the training, and you're giving them the new jobs to match. It's kind of cool to have a blank canvas in order to paint this really ideal picture. It is exciting. And one of the other things that you had mentioned is that impact to the community. Can we get a little bit specific as to how you think it's going to impact the surrounding area and integrate with the surrounding area? Because frankly, some of the surrounding area isn't necessarily your number one part of town. You've had the blank. People tell me it's the Bonnie Haim property. I've been here for 40 years, and who the heck is Bonnie Haim? It's been pretty much an empty site for so long. I'd love to think that the Chrysler site will then drive some development there, and some of the perhaps undervalued part of town gives it incentive to build up. Is that what you're hoping as well, and how will that happen?
Well, I think not just hoping, it's what we believe will happen. I'll start, since you brought up Bonnie Haim, there is a potential project at Bonnie Haim on the north side of that right now. Mm-hmm. There's also people who are interested in the south side of Bonnie Haim now because of potentially the Innovation Park. But again, those are things that will take time, because there's other properties around on the Chrysler site that'll be the first use. However, the north piece of Bonnie Haim, there is a developer who's looking at it. Don't know if it's going to happen or not, but he's doing due diligence now on the environmentals. So we'll see. That may occur. The uptown, we have not just the Brown Bank that the city purchased. We have and are putting in the higher educational groups. All have been interested in that building also. We've got three or four nonprofits that are interested in going in that building. So there again will be an opportunity for us to work with a number of different groups that work with the neighborhood. And that's all six of the neighborhoods that surround this. So they'll be there. We're looking at a potential incubator facility in the uptown area, small one, maybe. Not sure exactly what that's gonna look like yet, but that's another issue that we're looking at. We're looking at a possible children's library in the uptown area. Not that will not close the other library. This is just like a K-5 type of thing to help with education in the neighborhood. So you're looking at those types of things tying in, along with Gorman, who has purchased a number of pieces of property in the uptown, and they're going to put in a number of commercial at a very low cost to anyone who wants to be there on 22nd Avenue at about $5 a square foot, which is an extremely low price for commercial to come back in. And then housing above it, that is what I would call mixed income. I think we sometimes talk about things in ways that, low income, this or that. Mixed income is what you want in a situation like this. It's a perfect scenario. 20% of the people will be at 30% of the median income. 30% of the people will be at 50% of median income. 30% of the people at 60% of median income, and 20% market rate. So what you do is you have a mixed income in the area, not just one income level as to how it's going to go, because it's set up on a basis of income. So Gorman has been putting that together. So that in itself is exciting, because we'll provide more housing in the area than you have right now. I have more commercial in the area now that is at a fairly low cost. We've got a grocery store that's going to go in to one of those properties. So there's lots of interesting things going on at the same time as you're doing the Chrysler site. And as I've done this, I now forgot what your question was. I was going to tie all.
I think you're kind of answering it. It's just how. What is the positive? What is the negative? The impact of all these different properties, because you do have the uptown rebuild, you do have now the Chrysler site going on, and
the downtown also is
downtown. How do you manage it all, and how do you keep it linked together properly to end up with what you want?
Fortunately for me, I have some very smart people who work for me.
That is a good thing.
The two of them have done a wonderful job of trying to make sure that they keep everything organized.
That would be pretty insane. But even the vision is difficult because do you have conflicting visions? Do you have, you can't put too much of one thing here because you're already putting a lot of X there. How is that coordination really going on? I sense that one of those smart people you're sitting next to right now, Mayor Ed St. Peter, but how does that juggling happen?
That piece of it, I think, is actually the easiest piece. I'm a big believer of this, that, you know, I have people who tell me all the time, well, you know, you're grabbing too large, you're thinking too big type of thing. And my argument always is the same. Think small, be small, think big, get big. You can always strive for the stars, and there's no guarantee you're always going to get there, but it's important that you try. And I'm always been a big believer when it comes to these kind of concepts, as we've been putting them together, I want to try to make sure that, number one, we are going to change our community to the most positive and best way I can. Will everything work out perfectly? Probably not. But if you don't try to reach out, you'll never get there. That's why, from my perspective, the vision becomes so important, something that I'm a big believer in. And that's why I also make sure that I've got a lot of smart people around me who know what they're doing, because I can give direction as to where I want to go. I need people, though, that are going to make sure that we get there. And that's, like I said, Ed and John Morrissey and a lot of others. I'm just using those two, especially since Ed's sitting next to me, I have to. But those are things that it's those individuals who make it happen. Tim Casey, city plan. All those people are important to make this work. And they're the ones who I need to make sure it happens. But vision becomes one of those things, is that's where we're going. That's what we need to do. And it's very important. But I do want to mention one other person, because I think that sometimes she doesn't get enough credit, and that's Kathy Marks. She has been unbelievable in helping to put together the programming that we need to do to make some of this work. And so I want to make sure that, you know, everyone understands it's not one person who does it. It's not me doing this. I can have the idea and I have to find the money, but it's all these other people are the ones who come in with the programs, look at how the programs work and do it. So, you know, you've got a number of people involved, and I just mentioned four of them. And I think those four have done a remarkable job.
That's excellent. Here. And I would want to ask you a little bit more about that finding the money thing, because that does seem to be something that you have excelled at over many years, bringing the bucks to the community. Why don't we talk about that now? I know you've been a state legislator, you've been mayor twice, and that seems to be the thing that separates us from some of our surrounding communities, is you're finding the money to make those visions and dreams happen. How'd you do that?
I think there is no one way of doing it. There is that we are very aggressive in what we do. We're not afraid to ask. And that really does become a part of what makes us successful. You know, we look at state government, we look at federal government, and there have been times when they have been very, very helpful. And there have been times also when not so helpful. But when the opportunity comes, we make sure that we've got things ready. We know where we want to go. We put things together to make sure that that happens. The other part of it comes down to is that we've done a lot of things with our TIF districts, our tax incremental financing districts, which enable us to do a lot of projects. A lot of these were set up 20 years ago, my first time around, and now they are coming to fruition so that we're actually able to take some of those funds and use them where we need to use them. And so that has been a major help for us compared to a lot of communities that have never been able to do that. The other part comes down to is we work with our private partners and making requests to them. And so we do all those things. We just are extremely aggressive in looking for funds. And we've been very successful in doing it because of that.
You mentioned partners and developers. I just wanted to clarify the wayfaring or waymaking Group and Smith Group. They're consultants, correct? They're not really developers.
No, they are. Okay. They are people we have contracts with to do specific work for us.
Okay. Just, I did want to clarify that. In our remaining time, which, give or take about 5 or 6 minutes here, I did want to get back to some of the specific design concepts that I saw reflected in the survey that I hope everybody takes advantage of getting online and completing. Those concepts came through some of your community meetings and your consultants, or how did those concepts get introduced and also their little sub information?
That I can respond to that. That was done we've got an internal group. So the city has a group. Waymaker has 3 or 4 people that are involved in Smith Group. So we all met together and brainstorm, you know, what are the major categories? And you had mentioned, you know, there isn't much in here about the buildings and the industrial. This piece of it is really community engagement. So that's the reason it's so focused on these specific things. So we've got street life, you know, what's important for those people in the neighborhood? As the mayor said, those 6 neighborhoods, we don't want to just revitalize the Chrysler site. We want to revitalize all 6 of those neighborhoods. So we want there to be street life that's exciting and engaging. Neighborhooding, we coined a new verb, neighborhooding. And what does that mean to be a neighborhood? And again, incorporating more than just Chrysler, but we want to reflect the identity of the city. And how do we do that? Lifestyle, enhancing the health and well-being of the people that'll be in that area and those 6 neighborhoods. How about the culture? There were a number of people that talked about, what are we going to do with the fact that was American Motors and Chrysler and Renault and all these other things? Are we just going to ignore that, or are we going to somehow incorporate that into this site? There was talk about having a walking trail, and there may be some signs and plaques, and somebody said a portrait of,
don't you dare,
of the mayor, and he doesn't like that idea. But you know, as you said, he's a visionary. And then there is one for economic outcomes, which is the last one in there, and we did that intentionally. We don't want, this is not a business park, it's not an industrial park, it's an innovation neighborhood. So it's not focused on buildings and companies. Those, they'll come, but we don't want that to be the driver. We want the neighborhood and the educational piece and the opportunities really to be the drivers. And because we have that, that will draw the companies that are looking for the young people from our community to invest and engage in the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood.
And that does sound very exciting because it is very people focused, needless to say. To get to that, again, get to that agreement point, let's just reiterate what will happen again now that our listeners have been introduced to what some of the categories are, the livability and the safety. Are you going to keep it in categories, or are you just taking all of that information and making it into a whole for kind of an action plan?
At this point, I would say we'll keep them in those categories, but we will refine them. So you went through the survey, and thank you for mentioning that. We hope that your listeners will also do the same. But those categories each, so I named you 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 categories here. And in each of those categories, we've probably got either 4 or 5 different subsections of those categories. And people will be voting on and stating which of those they think are important, or are we missing something? Is there something that we should be including in there? And once we get all of that information, and people will be voting, so we'll be able to tabulate all of this, we're gonna put it together, and some things will fall off to the wayside. Those things weren't important. I'll just give you one example. Public safety was really important, obviously. Public safety is important. So what about that is important? We have nightlife that people want to be able to do things at night. Well, how do we tie these kind of things together? And it'll be, and I use the word funnel because that's really what happens. We take these six sections and then the subsections of those and what's most important there, then we move to the next level and ask these people, you know, it'll be more and more refined as we go. And ultimately that creates what will be the master plan.
It does sound, I don't want to say easy, but you've at least set yourself up for some success in terms of gathering that information, because I think personally, that's kind of the hardest, is just getting public views, you know, herding cats, whatever you want to call it. It's very difficult because everyone has such strong feelings. There are generational feelings. There are experiential feelings. That's pretty tough. But it sounds like you have a way of capturing it as best you can anyway.
That's definitely the hope. Yep.
Okay. So have I missed anything in talking about the plans? Because I know I would all of a sudden mix it up and then ask you just some general opinion questions. I want to make sure that I'm not missing a crucial part of what you're trying to accomplish here and how you're going to accomplish it.
No, I think you've asked all the right questions. Yeah, again, I just want to actually thank you for having us on, and hopefully this has helped explain things. This is a very, very important project. And I've mentioned some individuals, like I said, who've just been so helpful in the sense of what they're doing. But I want to always remind people that none of this happens by itself. It's a team that make it happen. It's the council that has to be involved. All of us have to work together, along with the community, to make change. And this is a big change. This is something we haven't done before. So I appreciate all the help from the community. I'm looking forward to working with the council to get this to that next step. And just everyone who's involved, I just want to say thank you to. And thank you for bringing this to the public's attention, because the more feedback we get, the better the project will be.
And with that, I'm going to thank both of you for joining me today on Community Matters. Again, we've been talking with Ed St. Peter and Mayor John Antaramian about the Kenosha Innovation Neighborhood that is located pretty much smack dab in the middle of the city, bordered between 52nd and 60th and 30th Avenue. And I'm going to have a little trouble with the east of boundary.
About 26th Avenue.
Okay. Lots of acres and lots of opportunity. So thank you so much for joining me today. And you have been listening to Community Matters on WGTD.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I'm excited to share with you on Monday's morning show my latest conversation with bestselling author Tom Clavin, whose most recent book is titled Blood and Treasure, Daniel Boone and the Fight for America's First Frontier, a careful examination of a much misunderstood period in North American history. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program, coaching every Carthage student to customize a career development plan. Information is available at carthage.edu/aspire.
Support comes from Kenosha County ADRC, now offering regional medical trips. Kenosha County residents may make a reservation for rides to medical appointments in Walworth, Racine, and Milwaukee counties, $15 one way. Reservations are required one day in advance. Call 262-658-9093. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, consumers are encouraged to apply for the Federal Emergency Broadband Benefit Program, providing a temporary discount of up to $50 per month towards broadband internet service starting April 26th, fcc.gov/broadbandbenefit. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, UW Parkside presents Melodus Mondays, a look back at a year of creativity and innovation in music at Parkside and music events, live stream during the spring semester at uwp.edu/Rita.
WGTD is an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR, a cultural asset and a community resource. WGTD is owned and operated by Gateway Technical College, with additional financial support from the Wisconsin Public Radio Association and local underwriters whose customers value public radio.